look at Sweetie sitting on her cloud of judgment, handing down life lessons to all the sinners.
Well, hello and welcome, everyone.
Okay.
Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 81.
Woo!
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series.
I'm not joking around.
I'm your host, Aaron Roden.
I'm so not a raper.
And of course, this is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear hole. Welcome, everyone. Welcome. Straight off the heels of Snowmageddon. Here in beautiful Seattle, Washington, in the dining room studios in the Greenwood neighborhood of North Seattle. Coming to you from very, very stormy Seattle. It has been a very trying week for everyone around here, because when it does snow, it shuts the whole city down. Because, you know, I will say this, there's been a little bit of lashback. Or backlash.
No, Kelly Clarkson!
God damn it. Just started the show and I already get something wrong. We'll talk about getting stuff wrong in a little bit. There was, I think it was, what was it? The New York Times or something, or Huffington Post. Somebody on the East Coast was making fun of how Seattleites deal with the winter weather. And I'll just say this. There are quite a few hills in this city. And, we're never quite prepared enough, I guess. And we do have a lot of transplants from, like, California. So they're not used to it. They're not used to driving in the snow. I mean, come on. Give us a break, people. I'm used to it. I will say that I am a great snow driver. However, I did have to stay home for most of the week from my day job, because my daughter's daycare runs on the same schedule as the Seattle schools. And so, you know, all the schools were closed and everything. So that was pretty fun, though. It was my daughter's first snow days. You know, first experience with the white stuff. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun just walking around. It was beautiful out. I love it when it snows in the city. Great, just covers up all the crap and the garbage that people leave everywhere, and the dog poop, which apparently, unbeknownst to myself, still does not stay. It doesn't freeze as well as you might think, and stepped in quite a few hidden piles down below where we keep our garbage cans. People are still letting their dogs poop out there. And they're not picking it up, and it makes me so angry, guys. It makes me so angry. Anyway. Like I said, in episode 80 with Kirby Crackle, we got onto the subject of talking about hats. And I said that I had bought a fez and tried to wear a fez for a little while. Got a couple emails. This one from Elena in Colorado. Thanks for listening, by the way, Elena. And, she says, I believe you are referring to a fedora, Aaron. Maybe next time do your research a little bit. Love the show anyway. Thank you, Elena in Colorado. And this one from Matt, and he doesn't put a location on it, but Matt says, I believe you were referring to a fedora. the douche hat, right? That's what everybody knows it as right now. Yeah. So thank you, Matt. I appreciate that. And thank you for not calling me a moron. That's very nice of you guys. So sorry about that. A little retraction here in episode 81. Boy. We're really getting up there. We've got a great show planned for you guys today. Musician and great, great storyteller James Apollo will be joining us shortly. This is a guy contacted me a little while ago, sent me his music and stuff, and really just enjoyed the crap out of it. It's very, very good stuff. Very reminiscent of like Tom Waits. So, and I know, you know, a lot of people that listen to this show, we get emails from time to time. We don't get very many emails. So it's always really nice to receive something. And I know I'm not the best at like bringing these things out and reading them on the fake airwaves. But I do try. I do try to get to the ones that get sent to us. But we really do. We really appreciate getting emails. Sometimes, you know, they're not good emails. Sometimes they're great emails. And sometimes they have suggestions about what music to play and that kind of thing. So I think a lot, you know, some of the people that listen to the show are finding out about new music and things like that. And I think a lot of you are probably already fans of Tom Waits. So I think you will really enjoy our guest today. And yeah, we'll be bringing him on in just a moment. But first, I'd like to talk about IKEA and my trip there yesterday. And you know, I don't know what it is. I was a little tired yesterday when we left to go down to IKEA. And IKEA here in Washington is down in the South Center area, which is down near the airport. It's also called Tukwila. They're very, very close together, I guess. But anyway, you know what an IKEA is. It's a mammoth store. And you weave in and out of these aisles in these, these done-up areas, these display areas and stuff. And it's basically you're stuck in a line for the whole experience. That's what happened. It was very crowded yesterday. We went there because for the last 3 years, our stereo, all of our CDs, our records have been on the floor next to the fireplace. On one side of the fireplace. And we've never been able to find a piece of furniture that can fit there. So we went to IKEA. Now that we have a kid who is getting closing in on the crawling age, we need to get this stuff off of the floor, right? It's a good idea, Aaron. God, it's been 3 fucking years. Get on it, guys, right? Right? So we go down to IKEA with the intent of finding a piece of furniture that we can put there. We get down there. It is so crowded. And we are literally walking in a line throughout the store. We can't pass anybody. When I do, when I finally get, this happened a couple times where I finally just got fed up with walking behind these two slow people. And it was like being in rush hour traffic. Seriously. For however long we were there, like it felt like 5 hours. I know it wasn't that long. It was probably an hour and a half tops, but it felt like 5 friggin' hours, man. And so what I would do is I would try to pass somebody. I'd cut in front of them, and then all of a sudden I'm stuck in behind somebody else. It was literally like being in rush hour traffic. It was insane. Anyway, we finally found something. It looks great in the house. It's wonderful. I am noticing that we do have quite a few things from IKEA now. And I hope people don't judge us when they come over. So, do you guys do that? Do you judge? Do you judge people who are just like, you know, all their furniture is from IKEA? Because you can tell. You can definitely tell the IKEA stuff, you know? But like we've got friends and they've got, you know, these, custom made things and stuff, but I just can't spend the money on that. I just can't do it. There's too many great video games to play out there. I cannot spend the money on expensive furniture. Plus, it's just going to get ruined anyway, right? Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Maybe we'll ask James Apollo if he noticed that all of the furniture is from IKEA. Hopefully he didn't. I hope so. Anyway, yeah. But we made it out. We made it out of the store alive. I was so angry when we left that store. I don't know what it was, man, but that place puts me in a dark, dark spot. It really does. I was just pissed off. I wanted to get out of there. I was being a jerk. Just not good energy flowing through IKEA. Okay? So on your next excursion down there, just, you know, I don't know, make sure you have some coffee, make sure you're good and awake, and make sure you're in the right state of mind, because that place can ruin your day. Absolutely ruin your day. Anyway, let's get to this, shall we? We're going to go with our first musical break here from James Apollo. This song is called Happiness. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with the musician, the man, the myth, the legend. And he has got some fantastic stories for you guys. You're not going to want to miss this. I hope you guys enjoy it. This is Happiness by James Apollo, and we will be back in one moment. When she kisses her eyes on down, must be a diamond in the ground. You can sit, you can stare. When you reach out, she isn't there.
Good. We can start from zero. We've been having a fine conversation.
We have. So far. We have. So you started it. James Apollo joining me in Dining Room Studios here. We just heard the song from his, what is this, the latest album?
That's the latest album called Till Your Feet Bleed.
Till Your Feet Bleed. And the song was called Happiness. And very good. Very good stuff. You contacted me a little while ago.
Yeah.
About coming on the show and checked your stuff out and really enjoyed it. You got a very like Tom Waits kind of feel to your music.
We have similar haircuts.
You do, yeah. I will say you are a very handsome man, sir.
I guess
he chokes on his
I get that
his
a lot.
Screwdriver.
A lot of men call me a handsome man.
So you just told me this interesting factoid, James, about two broken legs.
Yeah, well,
how the hell
I mean,
did that happen?
To preface, okay, you were saying I thought of this really funny thing I wanted to ask you about, and I thought was it my two broken legs? Because it stuns them. I was at a Christmas party after breaking these two legs, and I had this cane, and this woman's like, "You look really good with that cane." I'm like, "I'm using this cane because I have two broken legs." Like it shuts them up right away. I came out to Seattle a couple of years ago after I had broken both my legs in a motorcycle accident.
Okay, yeah. Motorcycle accident.
Yeah. I mean, everybody, you know, you get to a certain age, whether you're Dylan or Dennis Hopper or
right,
Peter
right.
Fonda or whatever, and you feel like this is something that you need to do. And so, we had that experience. That was fun. Got a lot of reading in. I got to read a few Russians. There was one time I was in rehab in Pennsylvania for these legs, and
for heroin.
No, but they still call it rehab. It was only I was in rehab with a bunch of like 80-year-olds.
Do you find that when you tell people that you were in rehab, like
They think you're drunk.
Yeah, they think you're a drunk or a drug addict.
Right. So you got to be careful where you tell, because it's, you know, it's just like, it's like whipping out a gang flag. You got to whip out the white one, the right one. But so I was in rehab with a bunch of old people who had broken hips. I was the only guy under 80 in this rehabilitation plant in the mountains in Pennsylvania after I had got drug out of Brooklyn in the back of an SUV. Stole a wheelchair. But so then we went out, and I was afraid because I couldn't move my legs. And I was in this like mountainy, like it wasn't a cabin. It was a house, but it was out in the mountains. And this is post-rehab. Then I was recovering because I had to recover on this sort of like single floor house. These people took me in. But I'd be out there, you know, kind of in the back in this mountain, you know, reading, not very mobile. And then they'd say, like, there's bears everywhere. And you'd just be like, whoa.
You're just hearing this on like the news or the radio or something?
No, it'd be like the woman that had taken me in be like, well, you got to be careful because there's bears all over. Like there's bears that come up to like the screen door.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, I can't.
Is this summer or winter?
It's summertime. Okay. I can't run away from a bear if a bear shows
up. You can't
up.
Run away from a fly, my friend.
Yeah, I can't run away from anything. Not one thing. No, it's one of the more helpless things.
So, okay, let's get back to the motorcycle because I'm curious about this. Mm-hmm. Had you been riding a motorcycle for
3 weeks?
Long? 3 weeks before you broke
your
legs.
Yeah, I got it. 3 weeks, basically, there was a tugboat captain from Connecticut, that drove it down, and he met me at the Home Depot.
So you bought this off, like, Craigslist or something like that,
I told
that,
the guy,
right?
Look, I can't get out to Bridgeport or whatever. You bring this to the Home Depot parking lot in Brooklyn. I'll ride it around the parking lot. If all's good,
backdoor deal.
If all's good, you're going to get your $700. And so... You know,
meanwhile, do you know anything about, did you do your research on motorcycles at all? I mean, did you know
For $700, like, whatever. I mean, how bad are you going to get burned?
Right, right.
Well, I found out how bad you can get burned. Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, there was nothing wrong with the bike itself. It was an 85 Honda something other, Honda Rebel. I mean, it was a real weasel of a bike. It wasn't super cool. But, you know, it tore around town a bit. And then it just tore right into this minivan. That was kind of the end of the Honda.
So wait, was it the brakes that failed or what?
No, it failed when a gentleman in the minivan just drove straight into me.
You're shitting me.
So
you were rear-ended or hit on the side?
I was driving through a stoplight and a guy turned left, like right in front of me going through the stoplight.
Holy
classic
shit.
One of your classic T-bones, yeah.
Wow, wow. Do you remember any of the...
I remember every painful second.
Are you serious?
I remember when I was going into the ambulance.
Didn't black out at all.
Oh, no blackouts. I remember when I was going into the ambulance.
Oh, my God.
There was some guy that ran up to me and said, hey, man, hey, you dropped your cell phone. What am I supposed to do with it? He hands me like a cracked, broken cell phone that he picked off the ground. Like, I guess it's pretty sweet of him, but what the hell am I supposed to do with that? Yeah. I remember, like, 6 hours later in the emergency room, there's a cop standing there. It's like, hey, man, I hate to tell you this, but I got to give you a ticket because you don't have a motorcycle license.
Oh,
and then he kind of, like, took another thing, and he's like, never mind.
Well, at least he had the decency to rethink his approach.
Well, I mean, there's no way I was going to pay that ticket.
Yeah, no way. By the way, how much would that ticket be?
You know, I should have checked that out. I know I paid the initial $700 and then I just kind of lost track of the other expenses.
Oh my God! So when did this happen?
Oh, I suppose this is about 3 years ago. This mm-hmm. is just before I came out to Seattle.
Okay. So you've been in Seattle for a couple years then.
Yeah.
Okay, and just kind of constantly touring. It sounds like.
Yeah, so you find a place to hang your head for a while, and then you move around. I've always, I guess since I was about 15 or so, just at one point it'd be me and my, you know, friends booking tours out of our own and traveling, sneaking into Canada and sneaking back and doing all these things. And then it'd be, I'd travel by myself sometimes, travel with bands sometimes, my band, somebody else's band. Like, always, you know, just like keep moving as much as possible. And like, I'm never happier than you're just sort of stranded in some weird town where you don't know what the hell's going on. You end up sleeping under a table with, you know, your new best friend.
That's something I actually talk about a lot with musicians that come on this show, is what the tour experience is like for them. And Moto Pony was recently on the show, And they had something that I found kind of interesting to say about it. Was you know, when you're on tour, you know, the first couple days of it are just great. You're excited. And then it becomes more, you know, it is work.
Yeah.
Really, you know. And then you start, you know, missing home. And then when you get home, it's kind of weird and stuff because you're stationary. You're not going from place to place to place. But it sounds like you kind of enjoy that. You're a man of the people.
Well, is
you're
the,
traveling, a traveling soul.
The post-tour. Yeah, man. The post-tour depression.
Was that cheesy enough for you?
Bring it. Just keep see how long you can circle around.
Right.
One.
Yeah, yeah.
No, man. I mean, yeah, the post-tour depression, even if you have a hard time on the road, there's always it's always like the worst day there is you get home and then it's just... Yeah, then it's back.
You feel like you got nothing to do or something, right?
Yeah, I guess maybe that's it. Or, it doesn't matter if you're playing to 50 people or 5,000 people. Like you're like out doing doing what you love, and it's mm-hmm, it's great. And, mm-hmm. and yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of work for a very low amount of money. But you know what? I mean, what else are you gonna do, man? It's definitely the. I'm never more fulfilled, never happier than that type of thing.
Yeah. So, do you usually go on tour by yourself then, or how does this work? You playing with a band now, or what?
Yeah, I mean, it's usually five piece band or so. I tell you, like last year, I think we had 10 people on the road. Like it's
really?
Good. Wow. Yeah, I never I toured by myself maybe when I was first starting out a little bit, but that's what is not fun. You know, you want to have
that's
a little
gotta be
crew.
Super lonely.
Yeah, it's super lonely, and you can't. It's super dangerous. You know, like because you're in places, you're always in places where you don't know the score. You know, when you're in your hometown or you know your local bar, you know, like that's the crazy guy. Like that's I can go this far with this guy, but that guy carries a knife. You know, but when you travel with you travel with six guys and this bass player Ben, who's been playing with me for a few years, like on the last like bout of last tour we went on, like every press thing we do, they'd look at him and be like, "Oh, he's a bruiser, man. Ben's a bruiser. Wow." They treat it like he was like the most gigantic person in the world. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You want to have at least one bruiser with you. You want to have one guy that knows how to deal with money, and you got to have one bruiser. So we got Jack, he's the money man, and we got Ben, he's the bruiser, and everybody else is just talent.
I see you've worked this out. You really have worked this out. This is like this is a thing, man.
Well, I'm thinking
it's like
through
going
it.
On tour is like the outsiders.
Yeah, band like auditions.
Who's
like, hey,
Pony Boy?
Wait, which? You know what? I've never seen the Outsiders. Is that where Pony
you never
Boy
read
was?
It? You never read that book?
No.
Oh man, classic.
Who wrote that?
I can't remember.
Mishner?
That's a real.
Let's say it's Mishner, and it's 5,000 pages long, and the Outsiders is about a place. I tell my brother, he plays keys in my band. He reads Mishner, but he only reads the historic parts at the beginning. So
I don't even know who Mishner is.
Oh man, he writes books. His books are called Hawaii, Texas. Like
shit.
I don't know, Boston. I don't know.
Wait,
all
is this
places.
Like a Lonely Planet book or something?
No, these are fictional books. You can find them in most thrift stores. It's generally a thrift store find. Like I don't think a lot of people go to Barnes and Noble to find this guy.
To find Mishner.
There's enough.
I like how you is it just like one name? Or is it?
No, it's James Mishner.
James Mishner.
I think James M. Mishner, but I mean now.
See, when you say just like Mishner, I was like, oh man, this is like some classic like Russian author.
I guess we weren't really talking about
roomed with Tolstoy. Yeah, you know, yeah.
No, he's right next to Tolstoy in the length of his books. They're very long.
yeah, 8,000 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So. It sounds like you've had some run-ins on tour. Care to go into that a little bit?
Let's see. You know, there was
Which one kind of stands out in your mind?
No, there's a good one that I remember. This one that happened stateside. We were we're in South Dakota. I think we were probably just traveling from place to place, going through South Dakota. But we stop in this bar. And everybody goes in there, and they all order drinks, and I'm mad at somebody. There's a lot of emotion on the road. You get pissed at everybody now and again. So I'm really pissed at somebody, so I go, I have a few drinks, and then I immediately go out to the car, and I go to sleep. And then, like, 3 hours later, everybody comes running out of the car, saying, "Oh, man, we got to go. The Iceman's going to kill us. He thinks we're going to sleep with his wife. The Iceman's going to kill us." And so I'm the only one, like, sober enough to drive all these guys away from the Iceman.
Yeah.
And you don't. I mean, I didn't ask any questions. We just went. And so I'm really mad at everybody, but I'm driving them to their safety down the road.
Right.
And we go, we're on one of the freeways. We're in like, you know, Lewis and Clark territory. We stop at this rest stop. It's like Lewis and Clark camped here and whatever. And I say, all right, guys, we're here now. I'm still pissed at you. Everybody get out. They're like, leave me alone. I'm going back to sleep where I was. You guys are on your own. And so they all kind of drunkenly pile out and they go out in the grass and they all sleep kind of under this sign in the, you know, in the tall grass of South Dakota in August. And in the morning, I get up before everybody else. And I step out and I look at them all piled under that sign. I look up at that sign and says, danger, rattlesnakes, keep off grass.
My God. Yeah. It sounds like you could go into the missioner business.
Well, you know, it's all about quantity. So that story is not going to get you to the more than page.
Dude,
well,
that's a good, like, that's a chapter right there.
I can get a good 15 pages.
Yeah, you could go into a little bit more detail.
We spend a lot of time talking about the coarse skin of the Iceman and how it matches that of the snake.
Right, right. And how his sweat glistens on his brow.
A lot of glistening.
Well, hey, man, let's go to our second musical break here.
Sure.
And we were going to go with this song, How Hard. And what's the name of the album again?
This is a record called Till Your Feet Bleed. This is a tune called How Hard a Harder Gold Can Be.
All right. All right. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ear holes with special guest today, James Apollo. And more great stories to come, it sounds like. This guy's a good storyteller. And he's very handsome. Very, very handsome. This is How Hard. We'll be right back in just a moment. It's a pretty tough sell. Loving me, I never did. Anyone will. She found a gold heart in me. And how hard a heart of gold can be. Foot through the door, I could always count on the floor. I know how to get along. I did before. I admit it's a pretty tough sell. Loving me, never did anyone will. She found a gold heart in me. And how hard a heart of gold can be. I'm free to wander and let my ever need. I admit it's a pretty tough sell. Loving me never did anyone will. She found a gold heart. All right, we are back with Mr. James Apollo here in the dining room studios. That song was How Hard off of his full-length album, Till Your Feet Bleed. And you can find that at jamesapollo.com, right? Buy it through there. You can probably get it on iTunes as well.
Yeah, both of those things are good options.
Excellent, excellent. And always go and rate this stuff in iTunes, correct? Because iTunes works on a very funny little algorithm, and unless you guys, you know, listen to it and rate it and leave a review, we don't get the just desserts that we deserve here.
We should say, I mean, it's good to rate it, like, if you enjoy it.
Should I just cut that out?
I mean, if you guys don't enjoy it, you know, it's just,
well, don't rate it. Don't, yeah,
yeah,
don't give one stars. Yeah, no, those are terrible. Those are terrible. We're only going 4 or 5s. Mm-hmm. That's what we go for.
Well, let's say five.
Let's say five.
To an even.
Let's
number.
Round up.
Yeah.
Right. Well, welcome back, James. So, like I said before, your music is very reminiscent of Tom Waits. And you said before we started recording that you've been playing music for a long time. How long exactly have you been? Is it always been guitar, or did you start out on piano, or what?
Yeah, I mean, it's always been kind of a lot of different instruments and things. I guess when I always made music with my brother when we were growing up, and sort of when we were kind of like in the Ozarks in Northwest Arkansas.
Is that where that's where you grew up?
Well, that's where I spent some rudimentary years.
All right.
You know, the folks that always take us to Branson, Missouri on the weekends and stuff like that. We go to
Roy
Branson. Clark Theater, like the Presley Show. Like, these are terrible, terrible things. Like, no kid wants to go there at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always hated listening to these things, but I always loved watching the musicians, you know? And there'd be, there'd be the pedal steel, there'd be the accordions, and, like, there'd be all this cool stuff. So, aside from watching the hobo clowns, watching the musicians and ignoring just sort of the gleaming teeth, you know,
yeah,
singing was always good. And so, you know, I guess my brother played piano and drums, and I played guitar and accordion, little piano, and we just sort of come up with stuff, and we just kind of randomly make things, and that sort of divulged into what, you know, to what I do today. And the great thing about growing up and making things like that, it was really devoid of sort of cult of like musical history. Like, I didn't raid through my parents' records and find, oh, my parents listened to the Beatles and they had this Carpenters record and they had all this. It was really like, there's this terrible Branson music, and then there's weird old sheet music that we're finding, and then there's taking that out the Casio keyboard and pressing Foxtrot, and then trying to like emulate what Foxtrot is like in real life, and it was so fun. I mean, I even do that today, where you sort of, the goal is to try and get away from popular culture as much as you can, and then you can sort of make stuff up, and then stuff sounds kind of interesting.
Well, that's really interesting. So, kind of, would you say that you're self-taught then? Predominantly, I mean, you say you guys found like sheet music and stuff.
Yeah,
were you able to read that?
No, we took lessons. So I took piano lessons, things like that. Yeah, no, I had to, and I think I've probably learned to read music probably like four times since then. You know, you read it, you learn it, and you forget it, and you learn it, forget it.
Yeah,
it's just like Spanish, man.
See, I never learned how to read sheet music.
You know what's cool? And I was just doing this last weekend. My friends were in town, and what we did is I got a bunch of sheet music from the Mississippi like library of archival sheet music. We found a bunch of stuff from the turn of the century, and we were playing this and recording it. And speaking of reading music, like, that's the only way that these songs existed. Like, we're coming out,
right.
Like, and they're never recorded. They were maybe played in some, you know, show tune, but they're not, they weren't big songs. They're just little songs. Mm-hmm. So we're recording some of these old tunes that were never recorded before, and that, like, you can only get by like being able to interpret the sheet music. This is
right.
It's pretty cool. Like, we have no idea. Like, some of it, it'll say like whistling or like mumbling. Like, they'll be really elaborate in like how they describe this stuff. So it's kind of cool just to look at. Yeah.
Well, that's cool too, because like, even though it's not recorded, you can, you know, with sheet music, knowing how to read that stuff, you can play it exactly how it was meant to be played, too. Right. I mean, you know.
Well, I guess sort of though, but I mean, if somebody's like, "Hey, man, I got the tab for your songs. I never heard it before, but check this out." Like, that's not gonna work for anybody. So,
how
it was meant to be played. I mean, nobody knows. Like, you can just gamble, you know.
I guess that would be, you know, one of the key factors to actually knowing how to read sheet music. I would have known that if I knew how to read it.
It's a lot like gambling.
Yeah, which I am terrible at, by the way. Jesus, like we were talking about earlier, I just got back from Vegas. And,
right. Big gambling town.
Big
gambling
town.
I don't know if you guys
know
that.
Yeah, nobody, you know, it's kind of a well-kept secret.
Second only to Reno.
Yeah. And, oh, man, yeah, I'm really bad. I'm really bad. Luke Burbank of TBTL had to kind of help me through some tough times there.
You know, I guess I don't really know anything about gambling either. I mean, I like the idea of bluffing.
Yeah.
But then everybody just knows I'm bluffing all the time.
Right.
And then
I didn't play any poker though.
Okay.
Like, I played like blackjack because that's how I know how to play it.
Yeah.
You know, and roulette. You know, you just put it down on a number or a color. But boy, bad news bears.
Oh man. You know what? We were on the road and we go into one of these private gambling clubs. where they have a crap table. I don't think they have craps in Vegas. Do they have craps in Vegas?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, they got craps.
All right,
yeah.
Sorry. They didn't have craps at any of the Indian casinos where I was a kid. But so we go to this crap table, and it was one of those membership-only casinos where you have to sign up to be a member. But it's free to sign up to be a member. And
was
they
it
get,
legal? Was it a legal place?
It was, legal. Or, it was legal, but I guess gambling is only private clubs or something. This is this is in Manchester. And so they say you got to sign up to be a member. And when you sign up, we're going to give you £10. And so we signed up, and then I saw the crap tables. And this is when this is one of those big bands on the road. So I think we had 10 people with us.
Yeah.
And everybody got the free £10. So that's £100. You know, that's no chump change. Probably more than we made that night. And then they say,
please tell me you decided to just take the money and leave.
Well, you can't take the money. It's only a voucher.
Oh, okay.
But the way craps work,
yeah,
you can put it all in red. You can put it all in black. It's 50-50. So you can take half the money if you do it right. First, we ended up taking half the money. Just let's go to the end of the story. That's the spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But until we took half the money for free, we got them to give us a private crap lesson where it was in the middle of the room and with all these chips and everything. And we knew it was a private crap lesson, and the dealer knew that this isn't real money. But everybody else in the casino just saw all these dumb kids with these huge stacks of chips being like, let's put 40,000 on, you know, B6 or whatever, you know? And like, I think everybody thought we were, you know, the sheiks of Araby or something like right, and also huge morons. Because who would put four houses on this one thing and then like it would all go away? But it was pretty fun.
Or you were visiting from Dubai.
Yeah, that's right.
Oil barons of Dubai.
I want to impersonate an oil baron more often. And not like a Texas
that seems
oil
like,
baron. A Dubanese oil baron.
Is that what they're called? Dubanese?
I made that up. I hope so.
Yeah, yeah. Let's no fact checking.
Dubian.
Dubian. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. That's good.
I'm glad we're both showcasing our ignorance on this one.
It is a country. Yeah. This is America, my friend.
Mm.
Yeah. We're not ignorant. We're not ignorant on anything.
My friend is a cat named Ignan.
So let's get back to your music a little bit, man.
Right.
So you took some lessons with your brother.
Right.
And you guys just kind of formulated your own sound when you were younger. When did you guys start doing that? What age?
Well, I suppose we're about 10, 12, like that.
You're just starting to fuck around with...
you're just making stuff. Or you're trying to... We're all trying to impress our parents or something like that.
Yeah, were your parents musical?
Did they pass on any of these
traits to you?
I don't think any of them ever listened to the radio. Like, I don't remember any music of any kind.
You know, that's funny, too, that you say that, because my parents were very... They were music fans, but they never... heavily listened to.
Yeah, it wouldn't occur to them to like put on music.
It was never constantly playing. Like a lot of my friends, you know, had their parents were constantly playing records and stuff like that, and you know, ended up with these like huge record collections that they would inherit.
Yeah.
You know, from their dad or something like that. And I never really had that. My dad was a huge Beatles fan.
Yeah.
And he loved Pet Sounds. You know the album Pet Sounds by Beach Boys?
No, I'm not familiar with that particular record.
Bullshit. Everybody is. But you know, I never grew up in that setting, but I don't know if that led me to playing guitar or not. Do you think that kind of pushed you into that because you were more curious about it?
Well, I think here's the thing, like my family was always big sort of salvagers, and the house I grew up in was they tore up a city street and they built it out of the bricks, and there was, you know, windows from some church that they tore down, and in the barn, they were always
banking on someday there was going to be a show called Antique Roadshow.
Right. I don't think they know about that yet. Might have got rid of some of the stuff. But you know, you go in the back barn and there's 14 toilets lined up in a row. This is true. And then
would you call your parents hoarders?
I mean, that wasn't a term then. They're more like salvagers. A lot of it gets used, and if they ever build a hotel, they might need those 14 toilets.
Right.
But so the record collection was very similar like that. You know, it wasn't like they ever went out and bought a record. But I tell you, there's in my parents' basement 14 copies, demonstration copies of the Olympics doing the Holly Gully. And I don't know. I never heard him play it. I played it a couple times. I played probably three of them to make sure they were all the same record.
Yeah.
But it's just random things back there. Or there'll be like a, you know, another like demo, like test pressing of Roger Miller, right. You know, but they weren't Roger Miller fans. Like they must've got it like at the same place they got the toilets, you know, it was just free. And so they sort of got it. So that meant the music collection was just random. And I think that added to, you know, when, you know, me and my bro were looking for things, it was just random, like the same level, you know?
Well, let's listen to this. It's here. Yeah. That was like me too. Like my dad's very small record collection, mm-hmm. which consisted of, I think, like three records, was Creedence Clearwater Revival and the soundtrack to Octopussy.
I've been meaning to get that soundtrack.
Yeah, 45 cents at the Goodwill, my friend.
Right.
Yeah. But so you start fucking around with different instruments and stuff. And when did you find that guitar was kind of your thing? Or are you mainly a guitarist now?
No, I mean I guess I really.
It sounds like you know how to work your way around a bunch.
Yeah,
of
Yeah, I mean I guess I usually write songs on the piano and I play guitar live because it's easier to haul around. But I mean, I guess recording and things like that, I'm trying to take the guitar out of rock and roll. Like, I'm so sick of guitars everywhere. And like,
it is kind of, it's the go-to instrument.
Yeah, and why does one guy need four guitars and like a piano player can just make do with the piano? Hey, we have a piano. Holy shit, you got a piano? That's fucking great. Oh, you've got a, you know, a 46 Gibson XR90 when I need a, like a 58 Fender, whatever. Like, stop being such a guitar jerk, man. Like, it just, and so it's all about.
Are you looking around here? Have you seen my plethora of guitars?
I only got one in the living room.
See, like, I got like four under my bed, so.
But it's hard, you know. It's just like, and they're cool, you know. It's good.
I'm kind of like your parents, though. I'm a salvager.
Yeah, you find them around.
Of guitars, yeah.
I'm a salvager of pump organs. I mean, I got a few of them, and they're just like, you know, it's, you find interesting things. I understand why it goes that way, but
yeah.
You know, I guess in terms of like the same thing of pressing that Foxtrot in the Casio tone, you know, like find an interesting way to do something. So figure out why a guitar works for you, and see like, what can it work on anything else, and then figure out different things that'll do it.
Yeah, yeah. So you still enjoy it. It's
yeah.
You know, music is a part of your life, a big part of your life, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. And I love it. And I love experimenting with different things and seeing how different sounds. Like if you play the same song nine different ways on nine different instruments, like see which one works the best, and the one that works the best will often kind of surprise you.
Yeah, yeah. And when did you start playing with other people?
You know, probably 12, 13 type of thing.
Well, I guess you were playing with your brother. Right. But, like, when did, like, you start formulating a band?
The Crystal Claws, man. Yeah, we started when I was about 13. It was pretty good. It was
Crystal Claws, huh?
It was heavily influenced by, I think, a lot of Skid Row and a little bit of Metallica. I think the drummer always wants to be into Metallica because the drums are mixed so loud in Metallica recordings.
Right, right, yeah.
But, you know, it was just rocking stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of guitars, pretty loud in those things.
Experimenting with a little shred.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Did you have long hair back then too?
Not if my hair, if I grow it long, it only grows out, you know, so it doesn't get.
I'm getting that vibe.
Yeah, it doesn't. So you can't get like a classic long haired look.
See, I always wish I had thick hair like that, man. I've always had super, super fine, super thin hair.
Well, if you grow it long, that would work for you.
Well, I did in college, and I put it into a ponytail.
Right.
And then I somehow got the nickname of, it was a mixture of Steven Seagal and what's her name? Fuck. She sings a song, Kiss Me.
Oh, I know that song.
You know who I'm talking about?
I don't know the person.
I think he...
Rodney Dangerfield.
Not even close. Oh. Not even close. I can't. God damn it! I can't even think of it.
Got a long black ponytail.
Yeah. Clearly. Yeah. Well, no. It was the square black rimmed glasses that did that one. That was the reminded everybody of the girl, and then the ponytail was Steven Seagal. So yeah, it looked pretty terrible.
To be compared to Steven Seagal is not a bad thing.
I wasn't as fat as he is now.
I haven't seen him lately. He is
just bloated. Do you know he plays guitar too in a blues band?
I'm sure he does.
And he came and played the Sunset a couple years ago.
I would like to see him wail against the Bacon Brothers any day.
That'd be a good like battle of the bands.
Yeah, whale fight. like actual like stage yeah, totally. Fighting whaling.
Oh, that'd be great.
Better than Steve Vai and Ralph Macchio.
Oh my god! And then Kevin Bacon could just dance his face off.
That's how he always.
You know, wins. You know that you know it would happen. You
Seagal's
know, it
about
happen.
To lance him, and then he just whips his shirt off and starts dancing.
Seagal's excuse would be, "Well, we're not on an aircraft carrier. If we were on an aircraft carrier, I'd kick your ass, Bacon."
He's used that so many times. Old.
Yeah, totally, totally. So, you were saying earlier you've been to Europe a couple times, toured Europe.
Mm-hmm.
How many countries do you go to when you go on a typical European tour?
A tour of the continent?
The continent.
Well, I mean, a lot of, probably the past year or so, we go over and just do like England, Scotland, Ireland. Otherwise, I've done a few tours, a few European tours, mm-hmm. Germany, Austria, Italy, France, like, you know, pretty much the standard European countries.
Right, right.
Touring
are these
the
things
great
that you,
capitals of Europe.
Yeah, yeah. Are these things that you set up by yourself?
I'd like to claim that, but no. I mean, there's a team of professionals in uh-huh. a way to handle yeah. some of the logistics.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, none of the logistics, just the actual, like, just you're booked here, good luck getting there, you know? Yeah, I'll take care of the logistics.
That sucks.
Yeah. Oh, man, there was one time we were playing in Slovenia. And Slovenia is a country south of Austria, near Italy.
Lies.
Well, I mean, you know, we were having trouble thinking of that girl that sings "Kiss Me." So
right,
sure
right. It's gonna come. It's gonna come to me like later.
And we had to be. We had to be in Austria in the morning to do like a do a radio show or something. And then we get up and we were playing. All the music venues in Slovenia are these things that were something else because it was a weird Eastern Bloc country. And so one night we played. An army barracks, and it was everything's cement and tough. And then the next night, we were playing a former prison.
Oh.
And the former prison obviously had lodging for us where we stayed. But, the flip side is, it was prison cells. And so I get up in the morning, and I'm about to, like, oh, we got to leave at, like, 5 in the morning and get out of here. We're all locked in prison because, the promoter's not going to be here till noon or something like that. And I didn't realize that they couldn't change that whole locking thing, but old habits are hard to break, I guess. So I was locked in a Slovenian prison for about 5 hours until they could get us out.
Did anybody even know you were there?
Well, no, everybody knew we were there. Nobody realized that we would need to leave at 5 a.m. because we'd leave at like a normal hour. And so if they showed up at any hour before the normal hour, I wouldn't really realize, and my band wouldn't really realize that we were locked in a Slovenian jail. But it didn't happen like that, and we ended up getting locked in a Slovenian jail. They made up for it by filling the back of our car with Slovenian wine that they all put in 2-liter Coke bottles, which are cheaper than glass bottles and easier to transport across the border.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's insane.
No, that's a good story. See, these are the things, like, just like all that, like, touring's really hard, man. Like touring is just like a plethora of these interesting experiences. You notice I have nothing to say about whatever the show that night was. Like, I have no memory of that.
Yeah.
Or the show the next night. I remember being locked in prison. That's what I remember.
Was it just like a totally rundown? Because I'm getting this picture in my mind. It's like totally rundown. It's like Alcatraz.
Yeah. It wasn't. No, it was.
No.
They had made it nice enough to like bring guests from America
right.
So
to play
there
music.
Were blankets and, they hung a couple pictures of Jesus over the cracks in the walls or something.
Right,
but
the blankets did have polio, but that's, that's neither here nor there.
Right.
Yeah. So you got these people to set up these tours for you over there and then
somehow conned them into it.
Do you have a label that works for you over on the other side of the pond or something or what?
We just have distribution over there.
Okay. Cool. And you made it onto BBC.
Mm-hmm.
Did some BBC sessions.
Yeah, I've done a bunch of BBC stuff. It's been pretty supportive. It's what's kind of interesting about radio over there. Like, we were there last month and we heard new stuff played on like commercial radio. And it's mm-hmm. like it's cool because that doesn't happen to me very often. And like. You can get played on commercial radio there by saying, hey, dude, check out this song. I think you might like it.
Right.
It's pretty rare.
Yeah. It's not like over here where we have only one station in the country that does that, which is here in Seattle, by the way, KXP.
Lovely people.
Great, great station. Lovely people. Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. So you've done a couple things with BBC, done kind of an interview interview type show with them as well when you guys did the tour over there? What was that like?
Well, they have a lot of like that. There's stations sort of everywhere. Like at every town you play, there's like a station there. So you should do like more press, and then you go do your show, and then they have all the national stations in London. We've done a few of those too. But like, yeah, it's all cool. Like it's all, you know, whatever. It's like a half socialist country. It's super well financed. They got really nice microphones. Like they take really good care of stuff. And we've done like the sessions that I've done there. Like they sound better than the recordings that we spend, you know, long bits of time making here. Because it's like,
do you get copies of that stuff? Do you get to keep some copies?
Sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't. I have I never get the copies of the things you want. You know, like once in a while you get like, oh, we have this for you, and that's great. And half the time it's like, I'll send it to you tomorrow, and then tomorrow you never see those people again.
So what's that like for you? Like, give me kind of this inside look. What it's like to go over to a different country and be invited onto the radio to talk about your music. Well, is that, I mean, you know,
I don't, you know, it's always like it's nice when somebody takes an interest in the thing you're doing. So that's really cool. On the flip side, it's like everybody's, you know, everybody's very much doing their job, like wherever they are. So it's like, this is, so if they're interviewing you for something, it's no different than them interviewing like some other guy, be like, what do you think of gas prices? You know, like, it's not necessarily like, wow.
What do
like,
you think of gas prices?
Yeah. Hey, we got Obama on, and then we got you on. You know, it's not usually like that. So it's cool. It's great. Like, hey, I want people to hear the things I'm doing. That's good. Anything that'll make, you know, that happen, that's great.
But still, it's got to be kind of cool, like, going over to a different country and hearing, of course, like you said just a second ago, hearing your stuff on the air.
Yeah.
And being able to go on like a commercial radio station and, you know, for lack of a better term, pimp your wares.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, that's gotta be pretty sweet.
It is pretty cool. Cause you think of like, cause the first time I heard a new single on the radio, it was like, they played like the Red Hot Chili Peppers or something.
Right.
And they played,
and
then they played my new song. And the thing is, like, it's got that, like, It sounds stupid, but it's only stupid because like I don't get it very often. But like, you know, there's that like major radio gloss that they put on everything. Like everything's got some sort of weird thing put on it, and so it's not what I want to listen to in my car or something like that. But it's when you hear it put on and you hear how your tune just turned into like the tunes that you listened to as a kid when you're like listening to the radio. You're like, wow, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Do you think it's actually they're tweaking the levels
somehow? Like,
are you sure about that? Because I've always felt like. Because I've heard my friends' bands that are on KXP or bigger radio stations and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I've heard them play it live and I've gotten their CDs and stuff like that. And I think what it is that you're hearing it on the radio, and it sounds different to you because it's fucking rad. Like,
well,
because it's that excitement that like gets into you. Oops. That gets into your head, and it's like, oh, this is cool. Like,
no, that totally could be. I'd like that to be it. But it's the same thing. There's all.
But
these,
maybe BBC is
no,
different.
Just commercial. Like there's filter. Like you know how we're talking right now. We've done a lot of times you go in to do an in studio just at like any like big station. They got all those weird compressors on the microphones.
And
they're like,
yeah, totally.
Well, you can't play too loud or everything will turn all weird. You know, I think they have that same sort of weird stuff that just like goes on everything. Like you know. I don't know, some kind of weird box.
It's like Slimer's ectoplasm.
Yeah, Disney just sends these boxes out to say, make sure you put this on everything, and we'll make more money. Yeah.
It's like this black powder they just sprinkle on everything.
It's burnt up.
Burnt up souls of like dead musicians.
Yeah, we can go for miles on what the burnt ashes of that box are, but there are a lot of different things, and a lot of people got hurt. And let's all enjoy it.
Yeah, a lot of people got hurt. There were tears.
Yeah,
that's what it is, dude. It's angel tears.
Glistening
angel tears.
They sparkle all the way down the drain.
Oh my God! So what's coming up next, James? What can we expect out of James Apollo?
Yeah, I'm doing a bunch of Northwest stuff over the next couple weeks, and then we've got a new record coming out. Worked it with a friend, Damian Gerardo, produced this record for us that we just finished recording, and that's going to be coming out in the spring.
Excellent.
And
he's a great resource for a couple of bands. You and Pickwick here in town, Brian John Appleby.
Yeah,
that guy. He really gets into the scene.
Yeah. No, he does. You know, you ever feel, every time I feel like, oh, I'm kind of lazy. I don't know if I'm going to talk to anybody. Like, that guy's talking to people. He's a very quiet man, and he's doing stuff.
He's doing it, man.
You can go out and say hi to somebody once in a while.
Totally. So one thing I did forget to ask you, what brought you to Seattle?
It was the farthest place from New York that was on a map.
It's still in the continental United States. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that's exactly why I came here, and I never looked back. It's so good. Like, it's just great.
I'm always curious about this too. How does the music scene here differ from everywhere else that you've been?
It's better.
Yeah.
It's really
weird. Do you find it more like inclusive?
Well, I don't know. Like, inclusive is a tough thing. It's smaller. Maybe it's warmer. Like, I never felt any sort of bad vibes here, but I never felt any like bad vibes in Brooklyn or anything too. I thought that was pretty good. And I think at the time I said, like, I'm leaving Brooklyn, and it would be better if I stayed there because there's a better music scene there. Now I don't think that anymore. I think it's better here, and I think that the music you hear, like, I've always I've never said I support local music over music. Like, I would rather something be good than something be good and near me.
Right.
But there's an inordinate amount of music being made sort of in the Northwest that's really good. Like, half the time the bands that I'm listening to
are from here.
And I didn't try to listen to bands from here. They're just from here.
Totally. Yeah, really I get great. That.
Yeah.
I get that.
We were recording, doing a session for one of these live sessions that's out of here called City Light Sessions that we were recording in just in Discovery Park. And then Jack Endino comes walking by. Says, hey, you know, hey, how you doing, man? Like legendary producer walking through park while we shoot video for something. It's like a little Disneyland piece, you know? It's like a rainbow runs over.
Did that just
a
blow your mind?
Yeah. No, we had worked with him on something else.
Oh,
like,
really?
That,
oh, okay.
That happens,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
That like, the people you really respect, like every huge band in Seattle or every huge band in Seattle, you just sort of, they're all here. They're all hanging out. They're all regular people. Yeah. And it's like people that you really respected or love their things. And just everybody's normal. Everybody's going to get coffee like 9 times a day.
I will tell you, I flipped my shit when I got Phil Eck to come on this show.
Yeah.
I flipped out. Like, I was so excited to meet this guy. And he was just, he was totally a normal dude. He was very quiet.
Yeah.
He was very quiet. He was more nervous than I was, I think.
The most shocking thing about Phil Eck is that I saw him, and before I
he's
saw
actually
him,
a woman.
Is that he's thin? I just assume
he's very thin.
Every producer is
every producer's got to be fat.
Gonna be fat. They're spending a lot of time sitting down. You know, I was just like, wow, that's clearly not him. I mean, he's a very busy man. He doesn't have time to go running.
Yeah. Well, he's finding time somewhere, man.
Yeah.
I guess when you live in a place like Seattle where you do a lot of walking up and down hills,
right,
you kind of keep it off a little
bit. Well, Phil Eck only rides Segway, though. I don't know if he rode it over here.
No, dude, it's fixed gear.
It's fixie.
He rides a fixie.
Right, I forgot about that. He only rides a Segway in the snow.
In the snow, yeah. With all-terrain vehicle tires, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay, I'm sorry, I cut you off. What's coming up? You guys plan some Seattle dates, too?
Yeah, next Seattle date is February 4th at Columbia City Theater.
Awesome. That is a great venue.
Yeah, it's really pretty. Really great sound.
Yeah,
love
yeah.
this play.
And who are you guys playing with at that show?
I'm playing with a band called the Foghorns, which is another local act. I always like to say they sound like listening to an episode of NPR's American Roots. Like, they mine it, and they mine it well.
Right on. And what else? What else? You guys going back into the studio anytime soon?
Well, we're probably going to be releasing this record in the spring that we just finished, and so that's a record called Little War, Little Less, and probably about April that comes out. Otherwise, we have a KXP session coming February 2nd in the morning, and then a lot of Northwest dates, Portland, Bellingham, running up and down Vancouver.
Kind of a mini tour coming up in the summer.
Sort of wintry tour where you don't want to you don't want to go too far in case trouble hits. Yeah.
Well, like this, we're in the middle. God, mental. What the fuck does that mean?
Well, it's like a little mint.
Right. It's like the mint that you get on your pillow. New word. Sign up for Wikipedia, people. Like
2 minutes of silence.
No, we're in the middle of snowpocalypse here in Seattle. It started raining today really heavily, which I was happy about. Kind of get rid of some of the stuff, but man. Good 4 or 5 inches
it's been pretty
of
fun.
The white stuff. Yeah, it's been great. Yeah. Well, hey, man, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been a real pleasure having you on. Hopefully we can get you back on when the new album comes out.
Great.
We'd love to have you back. And I will have some better alcohol when you come back.
We've been drinking like, well, not like men, but we've been drinking.
We've been drinking. Yeah, yeah. Screwdrivers. That's yeah. Right. They're still good, man.
I wasn't going to say it. They're delicious.
Yeah, they are delicious,
I
mean, right?
Hey,
yeah.
Do you want to? Hey, I was going to go get a couple of mimosas after this.
I actually drank mimosas last night, sir. Touche.
At night even.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. It was breakfast for dinner.
I like the way you people live.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, we're going to go out today with the song Granddad's Morphine and Wine by James Apollo off of his album Till Your Feet Bleed. I'm going to cut that little bit out where I stumbled there.
Nobody noticed. Yeah,
nobody will notice, except for now we're talking about it. So you can find this, of course, on iTunes and at jamesapollo.com. Very, very good stuff. Super impressive. And you can also get it in record form, which is awesome. I love that bands are doing that again.
Yeah, it's great.
Do you sell many actual records?
Actually, we sell a lot of records at shows. People have been more into buying vinyl. And that's pretty good. We ran out twice on the last tour.
No shit.
Shipped out.
Oh, that's great.
And
that's
so
great.
Who'd thought? You know?
Yeah. I think a lot of people, like myself too, like I have this whole really cool record collection, and I plan on someday using it as art.
Yeah,
as well.
Well, it's
you know?
Good art. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Totally.
Well,
totally.
People. I was seeing a show the other day, and the guy said, "I got tapes here, but they come with a free download." And it's like, well, I don't.
Right. Yeah.
I don't
people
have a tape
are
player, but I mean, I like the idea of tapes.
So yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm gonna start like, well, I'm selling old shoes with a free download because who cares? You know, like you're not using that anyway.
I have. Yeah, yeah. The tape thing when it first started happening, like a couple months ago, I was like, well, that's kind of cool.
Quaint,
you know, they're trying to bring that back. But really, I mean, tapes are just... There was no great sound quality that came from tapes.
It was always about ease of use, yeah.
It was ease of use, and everybody had a Walkman, and everybody... It was very easy to make a mixtape, I think is what it was,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's end this, shall we?
Cut!
We'll see you next week, everybody. This is Grandma's Morphine and Wine. And hey, remember to go to iTunes and lay down a little bit of a review and a rating for us. Only take you a couple of seconds. And do that for James Apollo too. Only 5 stars. He only wants 5 stars. We'll take 3 to 5.
It's
here at the Air Raid.
It's $1 a star.
That's right. All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll see you next time.